Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast. Today, it is not just going to be Mark Pearson and myself, but it's going to be Chuck, the brains behind everything, the guy
whoa, let's not go over the board.
He does have a big brain, right? It's just both of your brains work together.
But he's not the brains behind it all, Peggy.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. We can't edit that out if we want to, but I'm not going to. I'm going to keep that in because you know what?
Oh, great.
You humble me on a regular basis, Mr. Pearson.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. But we're going to talk today about 2020. So Chuck is the part of the research arm. Is that fair?
Head of research, right.
Okay.
Senior Vice President of Global Research.
So my concern was if I would have said that, you'd been like, no, Biggie, that's not him. I'm the person who does that.
No, he's the head of research. It's good for people. This is good to talk through. There's four people on our investment committee, an advisory side, and then the three of others of us who look at all of the things that we need to look at in our investment committee, which we do not discuss publicly.
Right. But we have Chuck's brain here, so we're going to talk about some things that you and I don't normally talk about on the podcast, right?
Correct. Yes, this will be a great start of 2020. The whole purpose of this is to start the year out right, to help, and even though it's the end of January, to give people some insights on 2020, because we do think, and Chuck, you can opine on this, We do think that there's going to be a lot of noise. There's going to be a lot of usual prognosticating, postulating, and speculating. And we believe that the more you understand about what you own and why you own it, the more you understand about your investment disciplines, buy discipline, sell discipline, we believe that the noise you hear is nothing more than noise, and you can shut that out.
Yeah. All right, Chuck, let's start talking about some clarity here. Where do we begin?
You got it, Matt. And thanks, Mark, both of you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. What I'd like to do, if I could, is kind of break the discussion up into three components. I'd like to start off, if I could, by just simply saying that the investment community was totally caught off guard in 2019. They were so caught off guard that they were committed to recession that they had to concoct terminology that really doesn't exist in the vernacular of the investment community. I wanted to just, if I could, talk about why we were bullish in 2019 and then kind of pivot to why we think 2020 is going to maintain that posture. Mark teed it up really well. We have a big election year. That's the second piece that I would like to discuss if I could. People say, well, the election, it's going to be volatile. Well, it may. Volatility is a wonderful thing if you have the proper investment philosophy and strategy.
Amen.
You got it. And then the second thing is this misnomer that you can't have two really good years in a row. So we did a lot of research, and we can talk about this, is where we had a negative year like 2018, followed by a really good year like 2019. What does history say could happen in 2020? And part of it, again, is because the lack of clarity of investors sold in Christmas Eve of 2018, and many of them haven't even participated back into this market. So that would be the second piece. And the third piece is, and I know Mark is going to have a lot of commentary here, is about pullbacks, why we love them, why they should be revered and not feared, and why, as long as we're not in a recession, that pullbacks are healthy and they actually allow us to recalibrate. So those are the three things that maybe if we could get into, I think that would be really good.
I love it. Matt, what do you think?
Well, I love it too, but I'm really curious on how you're going to talk about some of these without really doing some major projections here. So let's talk about the election specifically, because that's on everybody's mind. How do you as a researcher look at what's going on from an election standpoint and then make decisions about that? That's really interesting to me.
Yeah, certainly. And Mark and I talk about this all the time, because I think what too many economists and analysts do is they allow their emotional process to actually conflate with their investment process. And that very simply means we all have these personal political passions. There's nothing wrong with that. We all have a vote. We all should vote coming November. However, when we allow whoever is in office, whoever is in Congress, and you're either a dislike or a like for that particular party or person, to override our fiduciary responsibility, that's where we get into trouble. So your question is excellent in that we came up with something called the Significant Seven for 2020. So we found seven historical facts that would at least allow a premise to be made that it would be prudent to overweight stocks, equities, business ownership in most clients' portfolios based on their risk tolerance. So I'll walk through those and shouldn't take very long. So year four, which we're in now, is historically the second best of a president's term. So we went back to 1926. We sliced and diced all of the year fours. The average annual increase in prices, now this is not including dividends, is 7%. Second only to year three. Now, year three is what we had in 2019. That's the best year on average. That's roughly close to 18%. Now, here's the big thing. We love probability. So, yes, year four average is 7% without dividends. If you include dividends, it's over 10. It is a 70% probability of being a positive year. I can't predict the future. Nobody can. But what I can do is I can simply say, okay, to an investor, based on historical precedents, you have a 70% probability of it being a positive year.
Now, wait a minute, though, Chuckles.
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. Let's reiterate and make sure people understand something that I continually mention, and that is that the performance of your portfolio in any given year doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Let me say that again. In any given year, the performance of your portfolio doesn't matter. Let me explain to you why. If you're a longer-term investor, all you're doing at the end of the year is taking a snapshot in time. And the reality is, actually, the fact is that you do not make money or lose money in an investment until it's what? Sold.
Until sold. Yep.
So you can take a look at your year-end statement and say, oh, I was up 20% or down 20% or yada, yada, yada. And you can feel giddy or you can feel remorseful. But the reality is, all it is a snapshot in time. And, you know, if people understood what the value of their house increased or decreased each year, and they got a statement for that each year, people would probably sell their houses too. But the reality is that you're not going to sell your house, and you shouldn't sell your investments unless you're selling based on your sell discipline.
So very well said. You got it. And it's unfortunate we live in this calendar year microscope. It's an excellent point, Mark. I think it's what really distinguishes the way we manage money at Nepsis versus other firms. A couple of other things that I thought were interesting. A lot of people, and Mark can certainly confirm this, is that, well, it's an election year. There's going to be a lot of volatility. Why don't I go to cash in the middle of the year? And certainly we hear that, not necessarily our clients, but we hear from people who work with other advisors. Here's the key. Year four, quarter two, which would be certainly April 1st to June 30th, there is an average negative return of minus 1.5%. So if you can annualize that number. But here's the key. Even though it's an average negative return in a given quarter, quarter two of year four of a president, you actually have positive returns 57% of the time. That's hard for people to get their arms around. But you have an average negative, but you're more likely to get a positive. And what that says is there's a skew to the downward set of data. So even if somebody were to say, I'm going to cash because the average return is negative in Q2, when all the unknowns about who the nominees are going to be, what the makeup of Congress is going to be, it still is positive on an average basis. Now, here's the thing that's really cool. Patience is always rewarded investors, especially if you have, as Mark said, a buy and sell discipline that allows you to take advantage of these swings in market prices. In year four, quarters three and four have an average return of plus 4.6 and plus 3.9, and they're positive 57% and 71% of the time. So the great unknown becomes known. And to answer your question here, Matt, and I'll wrap this part of it up, what we tend to do is we look at sectors, we look at the policy of a given administration, what the makeup of Congress is, and there are always businesses, there are always industries, that are favored. Think about pro-military type of presidents. Think about presidents who want to expand healthcare and allow an exchange to occur, right? Have insurance companies there. Those are just two examples.
Yeah. A co-sign, of course, with when you look at the businesses you want to own, having the framework, the characteristics of the type of businesses you want to own. You alluded to military. And of course, we are required, Matt, I don't know if you know this, we're required on a quarterly basis to file a 13F. It's an SEC filing, which lists out our holdings. Of course, it's not indicative of what the holdings are when you look at it, because it's based on the previous quarter close. But you think about some of the defense companies like Raytheon, who's being bought by United Technologies now, Lockheed Martin, L3, Harris. These are all companies that have had substantial performance over the last couple, 3 years that are very, you know, they're just very, very good businesses. And there's a lot going on in the economy behind the scenes that a lot of people aren't focused on, because they're getting deflected into more shorter term type things, whether it is who's winning the Democratic race, who's going to be the next president, what kind of policies are going to happen, is the president going to be impeached, yada, yada, yada. In the meantime, businesses continue to do well, the economy continues to do well, and owning businesses over time has always done well. But we're certainly poised, I think, in 2020 to have another good year.
You know, Mark, I want to go back to something, because you schooled me on something a while ago, because one of the things that Chuck just said was, you know, people saying, well, if it's going to be really volatile, why don't we go to cash? And if we go to cash, therefore, we might be able to take advantage of some of this volatility. And I challenged you, Mark, and said, well, okay, but if you're not seeing any cash, how do you buy things when they're on sale? And of course, you did what you normally do on the podcast, which is very quickly and politely, which I appreciate, put me in my place and say, you know, Matt, we actually have a process for that. So would you mind just taking a minute? It's been a long time since we've talked about that, Mark, and yeah, I'd love to have that reiterated, please.
Yeah, great. No, actually, that's a really good point, because when you're fully invested, and we have been fully invested at this point for a while, and until we see indications of a recession, we are going to stay fully invested. But this is the importance of asset allocation. This is the importance of flexibility and transparency. Remember, we've talked about the four keys to successful investing: your investment philosophy, your investment strategy, flexibility, and transparency. And layered within that is what we have trademarked, that is called strategic cost averaging. And it is the philosophy and strategy, the flexibility and transparency, that are the, call it, the overarching aspects of investment decisions. And below that, if you were to build a pyramid, you would say beyond those four things are, what type of businesses do you want to own? The asset allocation strategy. Some are going to be growth, some are going to be value. Some industries are going to do better than others. Maybe you've got more conservative utilities in the more conservative portfolios. And layered below that is your strategic cost averaging. Flexibility and transparency enables you to go in, sell portions of businesses that have done extremely well for you, which, by the way, we're always doing, and taking that cash and buying other companies that are on sale that maybe during a correction on a percentage basis have gone down more, but the fundamentals haven't changed, or in fact, they've gotten better. And the greatest example I can give you this, by far the greatest example, is exactly what is happening right now. And what's happening right now is we're dealing with this coronavirus right out of China. And coming out of the gate in January of this year, Chinese stocks, particularly Chinese names that we own per our 13F, like Baidu and IQ and Bizon, names like this that are on the 13F, you know, they have now started the year great, but now have had substantial pullbacks in light of this Black Swan event, this whole, you know, health scare, right? Well, strategic cost averaging, your buy discipline and your sell discipline working together, enables you that no matter if you're fully invested or not, you are able to take advantage of buying something or more of something when it is on sale. That is the, that's why you stay fully invested. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
So Chuck, from a research arm, how do you support everything that Mark was just saying there with these three major navigation points for 2020?
Yeah, certainly. First of all, Mark laid it out when he said fully invest until we see a recession. Recessions are really, it can be, if there's anything that allows one to begin hedging a portfolio or maybe getting a little more cautious if there is a recession forthcoming. We don't see that at all. And I think that that's something that it would be an overriding macro feature. But still, even if we were, we would be invested in businesses that would actually still do relatively well, even within a recession. And at that same time, knowing that we're going to come out of the recession, ultimately, there's going to be great buys. So we're not a firm that is going to make these wild claims that one should be fully out of the market at any point in time. And I think Mark laid out this process. We have a strict discipline that allows us to look individually at a company and size up how much we want to own of it, why we want to own it. And then when we further, we don't allow it be in the portfolio anymore. So I think he laid that out exceptionally well. One of the things, if I could, I wanted to just mention this about the political world that we live in. And I, Mark and I have discussed this before, Matt. This was really interesting in our research here that we found. Pew Research actually polls the general public, asking them whether they rate the national economic conditions as excellent or good. I want to give you the most recent statistics. So 79% of people who define themselves as a Republican or lean Republican define the economy as being excellent or good. 33% of Democrats or who lean Democrat believe that the economy is excellent or good. Now, this is not to pick on Democrats, because back in 2013, right in the beginning of that point in time, if you recall, we had just walked through the downgrade of the U.S. debt. We really had gold that was kind of the asset class of choice. 33% of Democrats felt the economy was excellent or good, while only 10% of Republicans. So one of the things that, again, people do, unfortunately, is they allow their emotions and their political leanings to define how they invest. We do not do that at Nepsis. And I think that's, again, one of the differentiators of how we manage money here.
All right. Maybe this is finally the time I'm going to get you guys. How can you not do that? That's a fundamental belief in how you view the world. How do you guys check that at the door?
You have to. I always tell investors that one of the biggest things that you pay a portfolio manager for, a financial advisor for, is to be unemotional. Our job is to be the leader and lead the client. And there is a plan that is in place. And if I ran my business if I ran my portfolio emotionally and ran my business emotionally, what kind of negative impact could that have on the process? And again, let me just say this. This is the greatest example, because I've talked about this a little bit before, but I need to give this disclosure. This is not a recommendation. This is not a solicitation. I'm not telling you to go out and buy this stock. Do your own research and look at it yourself, because the stock has performed horribly. But we have a position in Zest Labs. ZEST is the company. And of course, that stock has been a brutal performer, and it has had a dramatic negative impact on overall portfolios in 2017 and 2018. And there's been a lot of emotional biases by investors, by clients. There's been a lot of emotional biases by clients, by financial advisors. And the reality is that while all this is going on, they're in the middle of a $2 billion lawsuit with Walmart. And it's set to go to trial in June. Now, we don't know what the outcome of the trial is going to be, what the results are going to be. We don't even know if it's going to go to trial. But we've always said, know what you own and why you own it. Right, Matt? And we've done a considerable amount of research over the years as it pertains to this company. And if there's any company that people or that I could have gotten emotional about, this one would have been it. But the storyline of this company, And the storyline, more importantly, of the client's portfolio has been that we have reduced the cost basis in clients' portfolios by over 60% by being able to buy more on sale. And as I was buying more on sale, investors would question me. And as they would question me, I would question them back and ask them one simple question. And the simple question is, have the long-term fundamentals changed? And the answer was always no. In fact, they had continued to get better. So when the lawsuit's done, as EcoArc or slash Zest Labs comes out of this season of their business, the story to be told will be at that investors lowered basis by 60%+, and that the emotions were checked at the door, because long term, no one position makes or breaks a portfolio. Again, long term. Short term can have an impact, sure. Long term, no. And as 2019 and 2020 have unfolded, people aren't even really talking about the stock. It's had a more of a positive impact on portfolios, and we're still waiting for our outcome. That's how you check emotions at the door. When you understand your process, Matt, when you believe in the process, and the process is a long-term, time-tested process, and your buy discipline, your sell discipline, your asset allocation strategy, and your philosophy and strategy have all worked together, the beauty is you don't have to be emotional. You stick to the process, and that is what allows you to check your emotions at the door.
You know, Mark, one of these days, I swear to God, I'm going to get you guys. I'm going to trip you up somehow, and I'm going to dance, and I'm going to videotape it, and I'm going to send it to you guys. Just so you know. All right. Well, so Chuck, so what else are you guys, what else? You said that, so the election, volatility, yeah. Pullbacks, what else are we looking at here?
Yeah, certainly. So here's another really, I'll try to condense this as best I can, which was fascinating to us, is, again, and Mark laid it out really well about emotion. So think about this. So we have this, I call it the Christmas Eve massacre, the mass exodus, December 24th of 2018. Actually get a text from Mark. It's, I think this is over. What was over? We had a 20% pullback. We hadn't had one of those since the Great Recession. And investors left in droves. So here's the emotional component here. They left in droves. They didn't have a relationship with a trusted financial advisor or a sound financial plan, investment strategy, and process. So they got out. And what they did is they watched the market rise significantly in 2019. So they tell themselves this: I made a mistake. I got out. I should have never done that. But I'm not going to make a second mistake. I sold low. Now the second mistake would be to get in and buy high, because you can't have two good years in a row. It just simply isn't true. So we did some research here, and I'll give you the condensed version. So we went back all the way post-World War II and 72 years of performance. Yes, there's been 21 down years, but think about this. That occurrence of a down year is once every 3.5 years. Again, if you break these out into calendar years, right? So again, investing in businesses still remains the most prolific way in our estimation, not only accumulate wealth, but preserve it over time so it doesn't erode the purchasing power of the cash you have. Now, there have been three negative back-to-back years, so we excluded those. That was 73, 74, 77, 78, 2001, 2000, 2001, and 2. But there's 14 examples of single negative years. So we had one in 2018, right? On average, the follow-through after that negative year is over 20%. So again, logic would have told someone, hey, we had a rough calendar year, let's call it, in 2018, followed by a really good year. What happens in the third year of the trifecta? So again, down year 2018, really good year 2019. What about 2020?
Yeah. Hey, Chuck, before you go to 2020,
yeah,
tell Matt and the listeners, mm-hmm, what did investors do in 2019? This is after the 20% pullback, particularly in January and February and March. What did investors do?
You got it. And that's, Mark was reading my mind, Matt. That was fabulous. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal. We had a record outflow of stock mutual funds and stock ETFs. to the tune of $134 billion. That's with a B. This was through December 8th of last year. There's a Wall Street Journal article that said investors bail on stock market rally, fleeing funds at a record pace. Think about that. That was twice as much that happened in 2008, the highest on record. And again, this is just amazing to us. And more, Mark laid out the emotional component. It was solely based on that. They were selling from Christmas Eve through January, February, March, and all the way through 2019. And to us, it's fascinating from a research standpoint, but it's downright sad when you really think about it. People just don't have a rudder. They don't have clarity. And that's the kind of mistakes they make when emotion overrides what should be objective process. So the negative year followed by the positive year of 2019 to 2020, there's only been one time of these three trifectas. So again, negative, really good year. So what happens in the third year? We have to go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, which the history books describe as probably the closest we were ever to the brink of nuclear war. The pullback was 28%. It didn't occur in a recession. Now think about this. On the brink of nuclear war, it lasted 3 months. And once Presidents Kennedy and Khrushchev came to agree on somewhat of a disarmament process, here's the key. Yeah, we had a down year, but the following 3 years, 63, 64, and 65, were all positive, all greater than 10%. Here's the big thing I wanted to get across. That third year of the trifecta, down year, really good year last year, the average third year of that trifecta is plus 11.69. So it is simply incorrect to make the assumption, and I don't know what's going to happen this year, but history would suggest that you can have that. Now, here's why I think this is, and I'm going to pass back to Mark because he laid it up really well. Those investors who got out last year are probably now hearing and seeing on the television or hearing people at family reunions and social gatherings, hey, I'm doing X in my portfolio. What are they going to do? They're going to jump in and they're going to push this baby up. And that is always what happens. And again, people don't have clarity and they use emotion overriding objective fiduciary type of right. investment process.
Right. And of course, they go and buy mutual funds and ETFs. And of course, the ETF world is really growing. And the problem with ETFs, Matt, in my opinion, is while I think that ETFs are great for certain types of investors, the problem with an ETF is they are immediately liquid. They're not like a mutual fund where the price settles at the end of the day. So when an investor capitulates and wants to sell, the problem with an ETF is you sell right there. And with some of the weird market things that have happened over time, flash crashes that have happened, and people who put orders in sell things, they don't realize that the potential impact and the risks that are associated with it. I often say this, people spend a lot of time basing risk on volatility, this idea that the more volatile your portfolio is, the more risky it is. That couldn't be farther from the truth. I would tell you that volatility creates opportunity. And if your portfolio, if you've done all the work up front and you've done the risk tolerance / investment objective process to understand what the investment objectives are of the money and the time frame of what you're going to have that money invested for, then volatility should not be considered risk because you're not selling anyways. You're sticking to your investment strategy, right? Mm-hmm. The risk is that you are wrong just once on getting out and getting back in. You could be wrong one time and it could dramatically impact the long-term performance of your portfolio. Let me explain it this way. What happens if you time it? What happens if you time something and you end up being wrong? So you get out and all of a sudden things go up 5%, right? And you decide, well, I'm going to go quote, invest in the market. So I go buy these ETFs, right? Buy these mutual funds, not the businesses, right? I'm buying the mutual fund or ETF and it's 5% higher. I missed out. Well, let's just say I had a $100,000 portfolio and I missed out on 5%. That's $5,000, right? Now you say to yourself, well, I missed out on $5,000. That's no big deal. But remember the power of compound interest. Take that $5,000, average it at 7, 8, 9, 10% over the next 30 years and tell me what that number is. That's actually how much you've lost out on. The time value of money is the one aspect that investors don't think about. So the ability to know what you own and why you own it, the ability to be more sniper rifle investing, i.e. strategically cost averaging in specific businesses when they go down, is huge. Give you a great example, Nutanix. We started buying Nutanix in the 39 range. It got down to 33. We bought more. 27. We bought more. And it went all the way down to 18 and change. And we basically more than doubled the position at 18 and change, thinking from a conviction standpoint, this is huge. Now, the overall impact to the portfolio going from 39 to 18, shockingly, maybe 1 to 1.5% of your total portfolio. It's not a big number, right? All of a sudden, 7 months later, you open your eyes and the stock's at 36. It's all the way back to 36. And what you were able to do when you bought more at 35, at 30, at 27, at 18, is you reduce the basis from 39 to 30. These were our numbers, okay? They reduced basis from 39 to 30. Stocks at 36 as of, I think, yesterday, 2 days ago. That's a 20% move in less than a year. In less than a year. I always say to clients, would you be happy with 20% in a year? Heck yeah, they would, right? That is the power of strategic cost averaging. That is the power of strategically pinpointing exactly in the portfolio where the weakness is and take advantage of the weakness. You can't do that in an ETF or a mutual fund because you don't even know what you own and why you own it. That's the power of Nepsis Investing with Clarity.
Now, in order to wrap up today's podcast, I do have one side question. And I think I've asked you this before, Mark, but I don't think I've ever had the chance to really ask Chuck this. So rumor has it, and my number might be a little bit off, that there's 1 trillion, and that's the one with the T, of cash basically just sitting in banks now, banks and credit unions. And I don't know about where you guys live, but where I live, there's banks and credit unions being built, these humongous things, buildings and stuff, because they've got so much cash, right? What's going to happen when people put that cash back in the market? I mean, if there's a trillion sitting on the side and we're still going up, goodness gracious.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm going to let Chuck answer, but this is one thing that we've talked a lot about. There's actually more than a trillion sitting in cash. What's the actual number right now, Chuck? It changes, obviously.
It's just under 20 trillion.
Yeah, 20 trillion. Yeah.
So okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. I was that off, Mark.
Here's it. What's that?
I was that off. I was $19 trillion off.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. Thanks for forgiving me. All right, keep going. Sorry.
It's not that much, right? It's all perspective. Here's what we've talked about in the past. Also, you have what's called secular bull markets and secular bear markets. And secular bull markets, as Sir John Templeton has often said, is that bull markets are born on pessimism. I think I'm hoping I'm going to get this quote right because I'm doing it by memory, Chuck.
You got it.
They are born on pessimism. They rise on skepticism. And they die on euphoria.
Right. And in between that is they mature on optimism.
That's right. They mature on optimism. Yep. Yep. And then die on euphoria.
Yeah.
And in secular bull markets, the average price to earnings ratio of the S&P 500 is 25 times earnings. In 1999, in the March of 2000, when the secular bull market ended then, the S&P's forward price to earnings ratio was at 29. And that most people know that 86% of the in 1999, 86% of the S&P 500's return in 1999 was based on 8 stocks. 8. So we are now, even as people say, quote unquote, the market's overvalued, the market's undervalued. Listen, whenever you hear someone say something like that, shut the TV off. First of all, overvalued and undervalued is relative. And I always believe that the market is fairly valued. Why? Because buyers and sellers have the ability to buy or sell at any given price. This whole idea that, well, the historical average, the S&P 500 is 16 times. Well, that's true. So if it's at 19 times, that's overvalued. False. Because in secular bull markets, the S&P actually averages up to 25 times. So is it really overvalued or not? So when you take 19 trillion and you will hit that euphoric stage, And when you do, don't worry, Chuck and I will be right there taking profits or hedging portfolios to minimize tax implications so that investors can prepare for the secular bear market. Because when secular bull markets end, thus begins secular bear markets.
Zen, you nailed it, Mark.
Thank you.
You got it.
Anything you guys want to say after that to bring us home today?
Not me, unless you have something to add, boss.
I was just going to say clarity reigns, and I would just invite anyone to join us on that journey. It's amazing the difference when you have clarity.
Amen.
Amen to that. All right. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. And you have to know somebody who you're sitting around with, especially, you know, since the weather's going to start breaking here relatively soon, or you're sitting in the ski lodge and somebody starts talking about how great their investments are doing. Have them listen to this flipping podcast, will you, by just walking over to them, showing them how to subscribe to the podcast on your phone. And just make sure that if you guys have any questions, you can go to investwithclarity.com and double check and see what is going on and what sort of things you need to be paying attention to. So for everybody at Nepsis, Chuck and Mark, this is Matt Halloran. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.